the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler. This is the time of year when students will be graduating from high school and from college. My youngest, actually, he finished in December, though. That's not too unusual, but the normal time is in June. And given that this is graduation month, and theoretically, people are going to college to find a career and provide the credentials necessary to work, why don't we talk about where the best paying jobs are, which cities are the best place to find work, and the best ways to finance an education? Why would we do that when we talk about lifetime income? Well, that's because all of this will affect how much money you can set aside in retirement.
You know, it's amazing, John, and I would probably have to say things are looking up for college graduates. The University of Michigan does a study every year. This is their 46th annual recruiting trend survey, and it runs between mid-August and September, and it polls 4,350 employers. And the good news, if you have children who are going to be graduating from college, 83% of the employers in the Michigan survey said the job market is good to excellent. Now, they have a scale that they use that's a 5-point scale, and it got down to 1.9 and 2.1 in 2009 and 2010, and it has been steadily heading upward. The good news, for the first time in 3 years, the scale has moved upward. It's at 3.3. And the interesting thing about the employment market this year for college grads, there wasn't one particular industry that you could point out or a particular company. You know, we've heard Amazon's adding people, Google's adding people, Apple's adding people. I mean, okay, that's technology. But overall, when you look at the job market itself, there wasn't particular industry that really stood out there and said, okay, this is the industry to go in.
Now, I'd be curious about all of this. In the survey, what do the top fields turn out to be? And also connected with that, the salary ranges.
You know, this would be interesting. And you probably can relate to this given what your son Troy majored in and got his doctorate degree. The number one field for jobs, number one, is electrical engineering. Number two is software design. Three is civil engineering. Now, think about civil engineering and the fact that President Trump wants to spend $1 trillion on infrastructure. So that is going to be a big job. Human resources was number four. Accounting was five. Nursing was number six. Marketing was seven. This one kind of surprised me. Ag business was number eight. Criminal justice, and then followed by math and science teachers and pre-K teachers. Now, let's kind of look, and I'm not going to read every salary, but the starting salary for electrical engineer, the average is $62,428. Software design was $61,466. Civil engineering, $54,300. Human resources, 47,000, accounting, 47, nursing, 46. So there's almost 10 fields, John, that we can look at. The last two were actually teaching for math and science in pre-kindergarten. So at the top of the list is no surprise, because we see a lot of companies that are complaining. A lot of U.S. manufacturers are saying, hey, we have jobs, but we can't find students with the skill set to fill those jobs. There was another survey, and this was done by Forbes, and it was called The Industries Hiring the Most College Grads for 2017. This is going to surprise you. Number 10 was business. Number 9 was agriculture. 8 was utilities. This one kind of surprised me. Number 7 was nonprofit, so it's probably some NGO. Not surprising, coming in at number 6 was the government. 5, accommodation in food services. So that's basically hotel, restaurants. 4 was healthcare. 3 was finance and insurance. And number 2 was administrative services. John, any guess, just a guess what number 1 would be?
President of the United States.
There you got it. Everybody wants to apply for that coming out of college.
I understand it's hard to get that too, by the way.
Yeah, this is really, and it explains a lot with what you're seeing in the real estate market. Number 1 is construction. And one of the things that we've seen in this real estate market, builders have been very cautious on building new developments. They've kept their phases down to small amounts. They only release a small phase and they don't open up a second phase until the first phase is sold out. It's not surprising that there is a shortage of quality construction workers. So right at the top of the list for the industries hiring the most college grads is construction, administrative, finance, and healthcare. Those are the top 4.
Okay, so the reason that this is so important, and we keep hearing this story, you know, people go into college, they make large loans, and then it turns out that they can't find a job. And then they have all this debt to pay back, and that creates difficulty. Now, the reason we're doing this is it's important before you go into a career, you find out exactly how much availability there's going to be in terms of jobs, and then whether or not it's going to pay you back for what you're getting in your education, which, by the way, Jim, is affecting the healthcare profession. I know we've been discussing some of that on Financial Sense NewsHour, the idea that if you keep offering disincentives, fewer and fewer people will be becoming doctors and nurses. And so you have to bear all these things in mind.
Yeah, especially with the cost of medical school. So one of the reasons we're trying to place a lot of emphasis on this is we want to give you a wide selection of industries that are actually hiring students. So, you know, maybe you don't want to be a construction worker, but maybe you'd like to get into finance or insurance, or maybe you want to get into healthcare. Or I don't know, maybe you like ag business or you want to go into business. What we're trying to tell you is, if you pursue a degree in these areas, you're more likely to find a job. As I talked about, one of the top starting salaries are electrical engineering. Now, a lot of these things have been done from general surveys. And there is another study. Gosh, there's more studies to look at. And this one is going to take a look at what are the best paying jobs for college graduates with the highest salaries, including what the salary ranges are. And number 1, and this is not surprising, petroleum engineering. Now get this, you want to get a job, work for a great company, get great benefits from everything from deferred comp to 401k, pensions, pay. Petroleum engineering, the average salary is $102,000 to $176,000. This one kind of surprised me. It's called actuarial mathematics. And an actuary is a person who analyzes the financial consequences of risk. Think of insurance companies. Think of people that work on Wall Street. Actuaries use mathematics, statistics, and financial theory to study uncertain events. And think of the last probably 17 years, why there's a great demand for this. The starting salary, average salary, is about $61,000 to $120,000. Number 3 is nuclear engineering, $67,000 to $118,000. Chemical engineering, $70,000 to $117,000. Electronic engineering, $64,000 to $113,000. Computer science engineer, $67,000 to $112,000. Aerospace engineer, $65,000 to $107,000. John, I could go on for 50. Let me just see of these 50 jobs. They're all science, engineering, software engineers. And it isn't until we get halfway through you get into, no, more engineering. The number 1 field in demand by companies are engineers. I don't care if it's industrial engineer, electrical engineer, petroleum engineer, manufacturing engineer, computer science engineer. This survey, we've got here almost 50 jobs. And I would say, John, half of them are engineering. A third are in the healthcare from nursing. And then you get into financial. But basically, scientific, science, engineering are at the top of the field.
You know, it's real critical because when you realize that this is a technological society and therefore engineering of all different types from software to animation to whatever it happens to be is really critical to keep all of this going, given especially the leaps and bounds that it's growing with. So it's very clear that engineering is going to be up at the top in the sciences. Now, let me ask another question. Are there other parts of the country where you're likely to get these types of jobs? I know you've talked about the Central Corridor before.
Well, that's exactly where it is. In terms of key findings for where are the best job markets for 2017 for college graduates, the Western United States has the most cities on the list with 8. The South is the next with 7. The Midwest is on the list with 3. The Northwest was almost at the bottom of the list with only 2. All of the Midwest cities are in the top 5. The top industry in 11 of the cities is technology, with the top job being somebody that has not only a technical skill, but also a managerial skill. So let's say you really want to get paid the megabucks. Just think of an undergraduate degree in engineering and then get an MBA as a business. My daughter-in-law did exactly that. She was an aeronautical engineer and she went and got her MBA in management, and she has just moved and skyrocketed in terms of what has happened to her career. Now, the top industry is technology and business. Those are 4 cities. Finance and insurance is number 2 with 3 cities. Healthcare is number 2 in cities. And let me just share with you what I'm talking about. Number 1 job market is Minneapolis, St. Paul. The industry is technology. The job is software engineer. It has an unemployment rate of 4.2%. And here's for you, those of you starting out of college, the median rent is only $1,600. Number 2, you're going to see some of these Midwestern cities. Kansas City is number 2. Top industry hiring for graduates is business. Top job is account manager. Unemployment rate of 4.4. Oh, you'll love this. The median rent is only $850. Number 3 is Portland, Vancouver, Beaverton. Top industry technology, project manager once again. Unemployment rate 3.9, but boy, the median rent is $1,950. Seattle, Tacoma, Bellevue, which is a center, think of Amazon, think of Microsoft. The top industry up in that area, though, was not technology. It was healthcare. The top job for hiring is nurses, but the median rent is $2,650. Indianapolis, Carmel, Indiana, technology. Median rent is $995. Salt Lake City, technology, with rent at $1,495. That was number 6 on the list. Let me see. Number 7 is Boston, Cambridge, with business. 8 was San Francisco. It was the only city on the list that made it out of California. Obviously, it would be technology. Nashville was 9, and that was finance and industry. Raleigh, North Carolina, that was healthcare. San Antonio, Texas, is becoming a hub for technology, was number 11. San Diego, Carlsbad, as technology, was number 12. That's 2 cities in California. 13 was Phoenix, Mesa, Scottsdale. That was finance and insurance. And John, your old city, Denver, was number 14 with business. Let me see who else we have here. We have Austin in the 15th spot. That's with technology. Oklahoma is 16 with business, Oklahoma City. Washington, Arlington, Alexandria is 17 with technology. Dallas, Fort Worth, 18 with finance and insurance. Orlando was 19 with technology, and San Jose with technology. So I take that back. Three cities out of California. But those are cities that you will find the most recruiters. A heads up to mom and dad, if you live in California, your kids live in Florida, chances are they may not be getting jobs there, moving elsewhere. But the good news, I would have to say, John, for college graduates, it was pretty dismal coming out of the Great Recession, and the job markets were very stagnant for the years 2014, 15, and 16. The good news is the job market for 2017 graduating students is the best it's looked in a long, long time.
All right, that's a list of where the jobs are. We've also talked about what industries and professions are, of course, featured in those areas of the country, meaning where they're in big demand. Now comes the big question to everybody when you're getting ready for that job. How do you pay for it?
You know, one of the things that some of the recruiters were talking about, one of the best things that will help you getting a job is, let's say you get out of high school, instead of just going straight into college, there are two things you could do. One is get a job and then go to night school. Maybe go online. Number one, it's going to be cheaper. Number two, you live at home, so you don't have the room and board expenses. And the best thing you could do is start out at a junior college, because we all know the first 2 years in a bachelor's degree, you got to take all the requisites, the liberal art courses. You've got to take biology. You have to take two semesters of English, mathematics, all that. If you can get either an intern, like one of the things we do at our firm is we have interns on staff constantly, and we've got a program going with one of the local junior colleges, and we take in financial interns. The great thing about it, they come in, they get $15 an hour, they're getting a skill set, they're working with the real world so they can see how the world of finance runs, and on top of that, when they get out of college, they can say, hey, I've got 4 years of work experience in the financial field. They become much more hireable by an employer in the profession that they'll be going in. Actually, we hired one of our own interns when he graduated. So it's one of the things that we like to do, but one of the best ways you can keep yourself out of that debt mountain is basically when you get out of high school, there's two things you can do. Either one, go get a job, start working, and go to night school. Go to night school online. It's one of the things my own son is doing. My youngest son is living at home. He works for us during the day. At night, he attends a university, and then he's going off to medical school. In this whole period of time, he's not paying rent. He's not paying for food. We're taking care of all that. So his salary, entire salary outside of what he spends on recreation, goes into a bank account, and he's banking a considerable amount of money in a bank account that's going to help get him through his doctorate degree in the medical field. And so if you can work while attending school online, it's going to be much, much cheaper, and it's going to be much easier on your parents staying at home. You already have a bedroom there, and it's easier on your parents, and that's going to help them in retirement. The other thing that I'm a very, very strong proponent in is what we call our 2+2 plan, and that is 2 years at a junior college and then 2 years at a state college. So if you're looking, it's probably going to cost you $7,000 for 2 years at a junior college. It may cost you maybe $15,000, $16,000 at a state college. So it's a cheaper way to finance your education, because the last thing you want to do is get out of college and then start work and you got this mountain of debt that you have to take care of and pay off. So think of this. If you do your research and take a look at those top professions that we talked about, the starting pay, you can take a look at and think about, hey, would I like this? Secondly, if you do go to school and hopefully it's a junior college because you're just going to get your basics out, you can work and get some job experience and do things like get an internship. And my middle son did exactly that. He thought he was going to be a vet until he worked for a vet and got bit a number of times. And he goes, nah, I think I'll keep a dog as a pet. I don't think I want to be a vet. And so you get an idea by doing an internship or actually working in the field, whether it's during the summer, between school years, you get a feel for, hey, I really like this, or really, I don't like this. But more importantly, boy, if you get into college and you can get an internship in some way through your college aid department in the field that you are pursuing, you are going to increase not only your starting pay when you get out of college, because think about this, like our intern had close to 3 or 4 years of work experience, not all of it with us, but he worked in the financial field all 4 years of college. And so he was much more of an attractive candidate to hire because he had some basic smarts on how the markets worked, and it just wasn't book knowledge coming out of college. So think about getting a work related job out of high school. Think about getting an internship, and then also thinking of a junior college and a state college so you don't amass a mountain of debt. Now, a word of warning to parents about student loans from the education department. There's one program I want to warn you about. It's called Parent Plus, because loans from the government to help their children is a crushing bill. The problem is there are hundreds of thousands of these loans that have tumbled into delinquency and default, and in the process may end up destroying a parent's retirement or making it harder. Because if you get a Parent Plus loan, forewarning, you can't declare bankruptcy with this loan. The government will garnish your wages and your Social Security the rest of your life until you pay this off. Basically, the loans are granted willfully ignoring the ability of who the loans are made to and their ability to pay back those loans. There was a great Wall Street Journal article. It was called "The U.S. Makes It Easy for Parents to Get College Loans. Repaying Them is Another Story." It's by Josh Mitchell. That article came out on April 24th. Forewarning, if you are considering a Parent Plus, you better have the means to pay back that loan, because if you don't, you can't just simply walk away from that loan. They will garnish your wages, or if you're heading into retirement, they will garnish your Social Security. So what we wanted to cover today was, where are the jobs? What are the professions? What is the pay? Where are the cities where you're most likely to find these kind of jobs, and what does it cost to live there? And then we wanted to talk about financing. And we're going to get more into financing and college education. We will have a senior college loan officer coming up in the weeks ahead. We'll be talking to him on ways to apply for grants, work programs in college, so that you don't make the mistake of getting into these programs like Parent Plus. And also this concept, we're going to even explore a different concept of actually not even going to college, but going directly into an apprentice program. This is called the Praxis program. We did this about a couple months ago. And I want you to listen to our guest on Tuesday following this show. We are going to be interviewing Cameron Sorsby. He is the founder of Praxis, which is a 6-month internship program where you actually earn money. And then at the end of 6 months, you get a job with a 90-something percent placement. We'll be interviewing Cameron Sorsby, and one of his students will be talking to that student, what it was like going through the internship, the skill sets he learned, and what it's like now in 6 months starting with a job. Imagine coming out of high school with a 6-month internship where you get paid during the entire internship, so you're actually making money, not going into debt, and you're starting at a salary that goes anywhere from $60,000 to $90,000 a year. That's coming up tomorrow on the program.
So the real important thing before you decide to go trotting off to college is to, number one, research the profession that you want to pursue. How much demand is there for it? And the next thing is check the salary levels that are available in that particular job. Because the last thing you want to do is go to college, amass a huge amount of debt, and then get out and not have work or have a salary which isn't going to let you easily pay off that debt. And part of this research involves researching the entire industry, the types of jobs that are available, the places, the cities where you get the jobs. And especially, you know, you can minimize this. You can minimize the cost before you do it. And we did it for my son during his doctorate program. And he has less, I think he came out with right around $10,000 of college debt. And that's all the way through 9 years of a PhD in science.
$10,000?
$10,000.
Wow.
See?
Congratulations to you and Carol and to Troy.
And he's very proud because he discovered a salary. You know, he's getting a salary now in his postdoctoral work, and he's very proud. He's paying off one loan very rapidly. He says, I'm going to target one, and then I'll get rid of the other one, and we'll get it done in a year or two, and so it'll just all be gone. And he was very proud when he was able to buy a car on his own for the first time. And I was too, because I didn't have to foot the bill.
You know, serious folks, I mean, there's innovative ways. The old paradigm of, you know, junior goes off to college, parents amass a large amount of debt and coming out of school and you've got this job waiting for you. That paradigm has not worked. It's not working. It's putting a lot of parents in serious financial difficulty, jeopardizing their own retirement. As that article in the Wall Street Journal talked about these loans from the government, where they garnish your wages and your Social Security. And the more important thing, you know, if there's one thing I read in all these job surveys, is the student that knows the job that he wants to get. In other words, he's sure that, hey, this profession is in demand. And I'll tell you, you pick any field in engineering and you've got it made. And not only know that, where the cities are, where the companies are, but getting some work experience through college in the form of an internship, that's something to look into with the schools in minimizing the amount of debt. I'll tell you, you're going to start life in a much, much different financial bracket, and you'll be more successful financially if you do this. And so wait till you hear the show tomorrow. I really want you to listen when my guest will be Cameron Sorsby, the founder of Praxis, and we'll be speaking with one of his students, Mitchell Broderick. We'll talk about what the experience was like going through an internship, getting paid. Imagine that. Starting your internship and you're making $30,000 a year. What a great way for 6 months, and then getting a nice five-figure salary upon the end of your internship. Great way to start life.
Well, you've already had one case study here. That was the Loeffler family project of getting all three of your kids out of college with minimal amounts of debt. But let's do our real life case study here on the program. It involves people we are directly affiliated with that we have known about or managed their projects. And of course, we changed the names to protect their privacy.
Yeah, this is going to involve a little bit of retirement planning and education planning. We're calling this the case of underutilized tax strategies. Our case this week is Brian and Rachel Flint. They are both age 47. They would like to retire at age 65, life expectancy 90 to 93. They're basically, I would say, conservative given their age. Their objective is growth with income. Brian is a business owner. He's focused on trying to minimize the impact of taxes, maximize retirement savings. He's also concerned about paying for his daughter to go to a private university. He would like to retire sooner and downsize. They're also interested in relocating to where their daughter ends up, since she is planning to attend an out-of-state school. Now, Rachel is a stay-at-home mom. She's basically raised the kids. She recently started her own side business selling crafts and other handmade items. She's comfortable with their standard of living and wants to maintain it during retirement. Her biggest goal, however, is to help pay for her daughter's college education and possibly graduate school as well. So a lot of education expense there. What was important to them is they had two simultaneous goals. They go, we want to put our daughter through private education, possibly even a master's program. We still want to save for retirement because, you know, her husband is self-employed, minimize the taxes, and they would like to relocate out of the high tax state of California. Their essential budget is roughly about $65,000 a year. Brian's take home from his business roughly has been about $120,000. They live very frugally. They were lucky they didn't have student loans, which is why that's important for their daughter. They don't want their daughter to end up having student loans and starting out life. It was one of the reasons they were able to start their marriage with a home. Their surplus is $53,000. And basically, they see their retirement budget dropping by $10,000 a year, hopefully moving out of a high expensive state like California. So their budget would drop about $55,000. Their Social Security would be estimated to be about $30,000 at that time, but they also are aware of the difficulties that Social Security is in, so they want to be concerned. Look, we don't want to be totally dependent on Social Security, but given that Social Security would be $30,000, they would have a shortfall. Their primary residence was basically $420,000. They had a rental property, and that house, by the way, was free and clear, so they were very proud of that. They had an investment property, $280,000, that had $176,000 of a mortgage on it. Brian's retirement was $615,000. Rachel's was $85,000. And their joint account was about $400,000. So they had saved up close to $1 million. Now, one of the things that they wanted to do, minimize taxes, pay for a private education. And they said, we want to be able to make sure, given that our daughter may consider a higher degree to get a good job, possibly covering private education, including graduate school. So we had two competing goals here. One for retirement, which basically they were 15 years away from, and then also paying for our daughter's education. So how do we do that? And then planning for relocation. Basically, what we did, we went into more of our dividend and growth account for both their retirement plans and also their joint account. That produced income of roughly about $62,000 a year in dividends, which would be taxed at a lower bracket, at about the 15% bracket, so that would minimize the tax, less the budget in retirement of $55,000, they would have a surplus. Now, a couple of the things that we did is we wanted to maximize deductions, which would allow them, especially for their wife's business, they can use the losses from selling the lot at the lake to minimize taxes. They also wanted to use, we recommended a 529 plan because they wanted to start funding money into these plans. And the nice thing about a 529 plan is if used for college, all the gains in the 529 plan would be tax-free if used for college. We also wanted to maximize the husband's 401k plan of roughly about $24,000, and we were going to use the Roth option. So this was another thing that we wanted to do that would create some tax-free income. So anyway, this was two competing goals. We were going to put part in a 529 plan because I said, look, if we can save on a tax-free basis for college, you need to have less money because you don't want to have a taxable account and then cash out a stock or pay taxes along the way. The 529 grows tax-deferred, so it doesn't create any taxable income. And more importantly, when your daughter starts college, which would be roughly about 15 years from now, all of the gains, whether interest or dividends in the account, would grow and would be tax-free upon college.
So what we're talking about today can actually be successfully done. Tomorrow on the program, Cameron Sorsby, who's founder of Praxis, is going to be with us. It's a 6-month internship program where you are paid during the internship period, as many internships are, and they have a 90% placement record after 6 months worth of time. One of the Praxis students, Mitchell Broderick, will be with us as well to show you that there are options open to you to do exactly what it is we've been describing here on the program. All right, what are we looking forward to coming up shortly on Lifetime Income, Jim?
The next couple of weeks, we're going to cover education. We're going to talk about the difference between a private education and a public education, the cost. Are they really worth it? If you are going to a private school, which private school should you be going to? In other words, is the cost worth the gain graduating? We're going to be talking to a college loan officer who will tell you the best way to fill out those forms, when to get them in, and what you need to put on them. So we're going to be covering a lot of things that is going to be very helpful. And then I want to get an employer from a major Fortune 500 company, S&P 500 company, talk about what they look for in college skills, interviewing skills. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal that caught my attention, and it said, "Word college students are falling short," and they said they're ill-prepared for the job hunt. 3 out of 4 applicants fail to send thank you notes to the people that interview them. So it's just, you know, simple courtesies and things that you can learn that is going to set you apart from all those other people you're competing against for that ideal job. So we're going to cover a lot of this in the weeks ahead and hopefully help you get the job you want, the pay you deserve, and the education you can afford. Don't forget, listen to tomorrow's program. It's a very innovative way to get a skill set, get paid for it, and get a great paying job when you're done with your internship. Instead of 4 years of college, try 6 months, and you're getting almost the same pay as a lot of those top jobs I was talking about at the beginning of today's segment. In the meantime, well, we'll have to say goodbye until the next time we talk. We hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.